Cranny?
He's got a bias.
Yes.
You're welcome to, to stay.
See what he's saying.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mike Graney from Department of Energy. We do support the bill, and also wanted to clarify that the fiscal impact statement that we filed reflects the combined costs, our best estimate of the combined costs of the three agencies.
To all three.
Right.
So it's a net.
Right.
But it's all, okay.
And
so the cost to Department of Energy would be one-third?
Well, and in fact, in terms of direct efforts, the staffing efforts we would do essentially with our existing staff, but we're anticipating as the cost being for the some of the expert consultants that we would need to assist the three agencies.
Okay. Yeah, real quick.
Well, Marshall, you get us excused. I guess my question maybe is to the senator. Why is energy in this thing at all?
And ask parents come to.
Well, we're talking about saving it.
Next answer. No, seriously.
No, seriously, we felt that energy and PUC, all of these agencies, have to do with transportation in some form or the other.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Representative Cloury, I would add, I think there is interest and responsibilities from all three agencies. It makes sense for all of us to be involved. I don't know as it's important that we be the lead necessarily. We're happy to have someone else be the lead, but we see some significant energy issues in encouraging mass transit and encouraging it to be successful.
Okay.
We haven't passed out all of transportation's budget, have we?
Yes, we have.
Yeah. We were done with it.
All up. We have just DEQ and energy, and it doesn't fit in DEQ as well, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I think we have a transit division.
Yes, we do.
Department of Transportation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why they couldn't coordinate all that. Save energy. I mean, we could change lights here and let Department of Energy run the capital and save energy.
I guess I question that the need for that. Well, clearly, the idea of having them direct is really a stretch as far as I'm concerned. But I'm not sure, next thing you know, we're going to have human resources because they eat meals when they're writing or something.
Health division because people get sick.
Well, we could. Yeah. Energy should be involved, should be in the loop.
But we don't need to be.
But I agree with the question. Why not ODOT, who's supposed to be dealing
see,
with
that helps
the many
to do the bimodal thing and give some emphasis to that.
We have an incoming director of ODOT, and Bothman, on his way out, is emphasizing the multimodal thing, the various. I sense the winds of change are rushing through the halls of ODOT, and perhaps we'll open some new doors there. And that's not to say that energy wouldn't do a good job, but it just doesn't seem to be narrowly in energy's court. That's true, and they should be involved.
I would say.
Okay, and that does make a difference.
No, actually, DOT. In conjunction with.
Okay. But your main point, Senator, is to get the study funded. That's the main thing. Secondarily,
we want people to cooperate with various agencies as well, and put it up as a priority.
Okay.
We figure if we're going to have 500,000 or 750,000 more people in the state, that we have to do the planning now, and have to move goods and services and the people around the state.
Okay. Let me ask if there's any other persons in the audience who want to testify on the bill. Okay, there's one gentleman. Anybody else? I see a couple railroad types. You guys just silent watchers of the process? I guess. Okay, go ahead, sir.
My name is Mark Ford.
Come on up.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Mark Ford. I'm the manager of strategic planning at ODOT. Right. And I only wanted to come forward to clarify our position on this bill and the funding estimates that we had done previously. We are doing a multimodal planning process which includes an intercity passenger services component which addresses some of the issues in this bill. Mm-hmm. Senator McCoy's bill goes beyond our planning effort to some very specific modal issues, mm-hmm. which can't constitutionally be funded out of the highway fund, okay. in terms of that study. So mm-hmm. that is why we felt that we didn't have a way to fund that without introduction of general funds.
Okay, let me test that study.
It's not that we're not interested in that.
Let me test this. If we gave this to you and said you shall do this study and you shall do it with enthusiasm and vigor, and you shall work with Energy Department and you shall work with
PUC
and heck, consult with LCDC. There's a lot of stuff going on in Portland area.
It's really
land
human
use
resources, state police.
Well, everybody else is relevant. Okay. And gave you general fund, would you put it at the top of your list?
We would be delighted to do that, sir.
Would you bring us back a report that's effective and useful?
Yes, we would.
Okay. What would you say? No.
Can you do it for $75,000 to expand your activities now?
That would be an amount of money that could be very effective, yes, going beyond our current planning. And yes, that would allow us to return with a very good report on and a very good plan with respect to your standard rail service and intercity bus. I do have a question about the high-speed rail, because we understood that there was another bill with high-speed rail, 836. We had produced a fiscal impact statement on that bill that was, I don't think it's appropriate now because we've after talking with Senator McCoy, we've changed the notion of that. But in order to extend the Washington State study down to Eugene, we talked with that state and with USDOT, and it would cost approximately $300,000 to do that, of which half of it could be federally funded and the other half would require some sort of match. So we had a fiscal impact of state funds of $150,000 on that, and we understood that this 763 was a separate bill dealing with your standard intercity passenger.
Okay. Senator McCoy,
yes,
looked like...
What had happened is that on 763...
Mm-hmm. Would you swing the microphone, please? Thank you.
Actually, we had a figure of $50,000, and I thought that you had coupled the 836 into it and expanded that money.
Not yet. This doesn't preclude high-speed rail. It includes railroad generically, which could include the range of options.
So that's how we came up with the other figure. Hmm. But the group, the Railway Passengers Association, and the high-speed people were really at first going to do the study in cooperation with, and we found out we couldn't do it that way. So they would be invited to go ahead and do their part with the PUC and Energy and DOT.
Okay, let's hear from the railroads.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Everett Cutter representing the Oregon Railroad Association. We did appear in support of some of these bills before the Senate Transportation Committee in support of these bills, particularly the 836 and SJR 10, because they had more of a freight connotation to them than 763. This appears to be the one that may move and perhaps have some other elements in. I do think it's appropriate for passenger and rail freight service to be studied in the context of pollution and fuel use and land use trade-offs, taking people out of single-occupant cars and putting them onto multi passenger vehicles. I certainly would pledge the cooperation of the Class 1 railroads with whatever study may come out of this.
Okay, thanks, Everett.
Thank you.
Question? Okay, it seems to me that this could include high speed. It is specific to passenger service. But I don't think it includes freight service at this time. It's specific to rail systems, bus systems, and regional light rail systems, and specific to passenger services. I'm not sure we want to extend it to freight specifically, but obviously this would be compatible with information gathered on freight. I mean, it could work with other information because we would push the cost up if we expand it. It makes more sense to me that if we choose to fund it, and I like the approach, I think we need to do these studies, that we direct ODOT to, with enthusiasm and vigor and with full participation from the other parties, particularly recognizing energy's contribution and working with Senator McCoy, who obviously is a driving force behind this, will perform this study within the budgetary limitations and involve the other parties, the Association of the Railway Passengers and the High Speed Rail Association, and perhaps other agencies, and get these studies performed and move us. But it makes sense to me to include it as part of that multimodal study and help push the agency towards multimodal strategies. We want to push and cause ODOT to move in that direction, get away from just highways. What do you think?
Do we want to modify the language a little bit?
Yeah, what do you suggest?
Well, let's see.
Down on the...
In Section 2, I think I would suggest we take out all references and just say the plan required, and that should take care of that.
Okay.
And then up above, I think we just reorder them. I think the wording you had a few minutes ago, the Department of Transportation in conjunction with the PUC in consultation with or something like that.
Okay.
Just start it and reverse the order. DOT in consultation with PUC, or excuse me, in conjunction with PUC and consultation with DOE.
Mm-hmm.
And then just go on from there.
Aye.
With the advice of the organizations involved and all that stuff.
Okay, and then add an expenditure limitation of general fund of $75,000?
25.
25? 25 won't do it. 75.
He said he could.
75 is pretty cheap.
Yeah. Just kidding.
More than I make, but his studies are expensive.
Well, this is a biennial figure.
That's true. So it's $37,500 a year, isn't it? Okay. I think that we've got a package, Senator McCoy. Does that sound satisfactory?
That's fine.
Okay, and I'd like to congratulate you on chasing this rather elusive dog and finally getting it to the point where it's doing some good.
Could I ask the Senator if he'd mind if we put a little caboose bill in here?
Oh. Go ahead.
Expenditure limitation? We don't need any FTEs because it's going to be primarily contracting out. We understand that. You're not going to come back and ask for any FTEs as a result of this, right? Okay, no FTEs. You will not come back.
For the record, what was your name?
Okay, that's Mark Ford. He's Director of Strategic Planning for ODOT.
No additional FTEs.
And you'd probably be the one implementing it. Mike, I'd like to thank you for your support and urge you to work closely with Mark. And I think we need to recognize you've taken leadership in this area, and that's something that needs to be congratulated. Let's push it into there. Okay. Representative Flory has moved to amend the bill as discussed. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Flory moves the bill to the floor to pass recommendation, or to the full committee to pass recommendation. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Okay. I'm willing to sit down here until they come drag me out. So, for a call of the Senate. So if we can just proceed, we'll go to...
It's an easy one.
Let's see, 473. That's the solid waste bill. Can we conclude that discussion? Do you think so? How do the members feel about that? Should we go on to the other bills first?
I think we're doing fine until we started talking about 475. How far did we get into that?
I would like to talk, as long as we had Granny here, talk to the Energy Department budget out on a reconsideration.
Okay, we can do that. Where'd Mike go? Let's take care of the Energy Department budget on reconsideration. Can we do that?
What do we have to do that?
We can do that. We need to do it, Mike. If we can get energy fixed and back out, we can send it to full committee tomorrow.
It just happened. Any remaining issue?
The issue is we have unhappy co-chairs. The co-chairs are unhappy with the level of funding for the GIS. And to put it bluntly, they yanked my leash.
Really? Well, I told them I didn't want to reconsider this. Yeah, I think we did fine.
I thought we did too, but you know how it is with co-chairs.
There aren't the votes in the subcommittee to reconsider the budget.
Well, the budget report won't be signed. That's the problem.
Not my problem.
Well, Mike, you having heart palpitations? Or,
yes, sir.
You know, I think it would be probably prudent to consider the suggestion to reduce the GIS from 500,000 to a level that they came back to us with, 350,000, which would provide for marketing, provide for quite a bit of hardware, and still would not give them any personnel expenditure. They would still have to get that from meaning sales, basically, to other agencies. Well, let me make the motion so I can go back to the co-chair and express the subcommittee's displeasure with his request. Let me make the motion that we reconsider the vote by which we pass the energy budget to the full committee of the DPAS recommendation. On the question?
I vote no.
Okay, we don't have to take a roll. Is there objection to that motion?
The motion was to reconsider?
To reconsider.
I object.
Okay, we have one objection. We have two objections. Okay, we have not obtained the reconsideration motion. I'll go back and negotiate with the co-chair. Okay?
Thank you. Yes, sir. Let the record show that, among other things, I am fighting to defend a purchase of all non-IBM equipment.
That's the record.
That's important.
It's
part of the record.
Part of the record. Okay. Okay, well, we got that fixed. Do we have a consensus on the total vehicles bill? I know there's been a lot of discussion. Are there three votes for any version of the total vehicles bill at this point in time? If there is, I'll bring it up for a work session.
Well, this is the flagging bill.
Yeah. Pardon?
The flagging bill. Not flogging bill, but flagging.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, it doesn't sound like we have three votes.
I've got a question I want to ask.
Okay.
Ted, if you want to go ahead, but I may have had some bad information earlier, and I need to clarify something.
Okay. Bad information?
Well, in the sense that I was told that the 80% figure was not in this bill. But I've got the A engrossed version of the bill, which is what I was working from yesterday. And it has the 80% in it.
It sounds like we need some discussion on the bill. So I'll open a work session on 2297. And we have a question from Representative Minnis.
Yeah, I mean, I was talked to later after the questions yesterday and was told that the 80% figure was out. And if we're talking A engrossed version, it's in.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Al Elkins, representing the Oregon Autobody Craftsman Association. You're correct, Representative Minnis, the 80% is in the bill. It no longer deals with the definition of total vehicle except in the cases of uninsured motorists. Those motorists that are uninsured.
Oh, I see. Not covered.
Yes, that are not covered. We have put into that bill a formula which we thought as a work group would be the easiest for them to, by which they could determine what the retail market value of their vehicles are.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I have a couple of people from Portland that would like to testify to the importance of this bill, if you feel like necessary to get into that.
Well, okay, just a second. Do members want to pursue this at this point?
Well, I have no problem pursuing it. I guess what I need, really, is more of a technical drawing of what the bill bill envisions. It's very difficult reading the technical part of the bill to get an idea what it really does.
Okay.
Let's take 5 or 7 minutes and let you attempt to describe what the bill does in real clear terms.
In fact, that board over there.
You can use your people, you can use the board. Go ahead.
I'm a visual person.
Mr. Chairman, I'll have Joanne Peterson mark out how it's going to work through the Department of Motor Vehicles in terms of title cell.
Okay. Joanne, just swing that microphone towards you if you're going to draw on the board.
Maybe we could, she, I don't know how elaborate of a thing she's going to draw there. It's going to take her some time. We could hear from some people.
Let's get up a couple of your witnesses while she's, go ahead and Joanne, draw on the board. And let's get a couple of your witnesses up here.
I assume they traveled from some distance to be here. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Well, let's make it worth your while.
Thank you.
This is one ring at the 16th.
Yes, Nia, the only rule is you give your name as you present your testimony, and go ahead.
Okay. I'll start. I'm Ann Romano, and I live in Portland. And in June of 1989, I can't recall which right off the top of my head, sorry. I purchased a car which had been totaled. And I still have trouble believing that that was actually the case. I'm not exactly a novice when it comes to buying cars. I have done it for most of my adult life, and I have never bought a new car from a dealer, believe it or not. And so I know all the questions to ask, and I ask them all the time, and I'm quite careful, and I'm very, very thorough, and I don't just buy the first thing that I see. So at any rate, I bought this car. It had been clipped. It had been totaled by the insurance company. The people I bought it from didn't tell me that it had ever been wrecked. I asked them, of course, had it ever been wrecked. No.
Private party you purchased it from?
Sorry?
Did you purchase it from a private party or
a
dealer?
You know, I thought I purchased it from a private party, but no, I didn't. Hmm. I purchased it actually from a company called Franco's. But the person who sold me the car was, the title was in his name, not in the Franco name. So when he had gotten the new title, it was in his name. Hmm. And I, you know, I asked him all those questions, like, why is he selling it and all that sort of stuff. And so,
Real clear.
And I assume what that you would be confused about that, in that you saw what appeared to be a probably a private ad or a sign or something, and you went to a home, and there were things that made it look like you were buying from an individual.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is that true?
Yes. In the newspaper, too, if you look at the used car ads in the newspaper, one of the things that it says nearly always is dealer.
Yeah.
And, right. You know what to expect that way. And usually they answered the phone, hello. They didn't answer the phone like, okay, you know, this is a company or anything like that. So I didn't have reason to suspect that this was a dealer. Even had I had reason to suspect, I don't know that I never would have had any idea that the car had been so totally damaged.
Hmm. How bad was it?
You mean in terms of
drivability?
You know, the car, you could drive the car after it had been wrecked. Mm-hmm. But what they did is they cut off the back end of the car and attached another back end to it, because, you know, it would be, I guess, cost prohibitive to do all new parts and everything for it. I mean, it must have been cost prohibitive, or else the insurance company wouldn't have totaled it. It's sort of what my thought on it is. Whether or not that's true, I can't say.
Remnants.
Were there developed some structural difficulties with the car, or did you just somehow come to find out that the vehicle had been repaired? And that's the objectionable factor. Did this thing fall apart while you're driving down the roadway, or the paint peeled back? Or,
you know, I wish, it doesn't matter, I suppose. I got a note in my mailbox that Detective Zink wanted to talk to me about my car.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first I ever knew about it. And of course, it wasn't funny at the time.
Okay, did the car turn out to be a stolen vehicle?
I don't think that's ever been established. Because it was, you know, it's two different cars.
Okay, so you were contacted by a detective from the Portland Police Bureau, mm-hmm, wanted to talk to you about your car.
Mm-hmm.
Do you still own the car?
No, I
haven't. Where's the car?
Well, we don't know exactly about it this time.
I'm sorry.
Well, either the police still have it, or...
You mean they took it?
Yes, they took it. They wouldn't allow me to
drive
it.
When did they take it?
They said it was unsafe to drive. September 21st, 1990.
Was it accessory to a crime? Was that?
Yes.
Okay, Joe. Why'd you tow this puppy?
We were conducting an investigation. I'm Detective Joe Zink from Portland Police Bureau, excuse me.
doing an investigation involving targeted at the Franco Auto Body Shop, which at that time maintained both wreckers and dealers' licenses through DMV. We first went at them thinking that they were handling stolen cars. We were never able to establish that, but we got involved in this by deception type investigation where they were literally buying two wrecked cars with opposing damage. One was severe front damage, one was severe rear damage, cutting them in half, throwing away the bad parts, welding the other two parts together, painting them up using a few gallons of Bondo body putty, and then selling the car as a healthy car. No brand on the title, no information giving. If they really got pushed, typically they might say, well, we had to change a fender or a door, something very minimal type damage that nobody would have any objection to. Through our investigation, through Portland Community College Body Shop, their instructor staff, we were able to establish that these cars were very hazardous on the street. The type of welding they did, the way they re-welded these two cars together, reduced the strength in the vicinity of that weld, and vicinity I mean by 2 or 3 inches either side of it, down to 40% of its original strength, leaving a very severe, significant shear point, so that if the car were hit, especially from the side quarter panel somehow, the car could literally break in half. Ms. Romano's car was one of the better ones in the fact that it was done in the rear. Most of the other cars we looked at were done actually under the front seat. So theoretically, you've got a people in the front seat, at least the driver, sliding down the street, seat belted in, everything's fine there, but feet are hanging out in the wind. The front end of the car is going off in another direction. And we were also told that this could actually, the vibrations on the light over a use of the car could start creating stress fractures much earlier than
they were just welded, just spot yeah. welded around.
Well, they weren't even spot welded. They're using either, and we saw we were able to identify both arc and acetylene type welds, which the heat
a mix.
Well, either or. Some areas they'd use one, some areas they use the other. Depending on what happened to be working that day, if they had any acetylene. So
let me ask you a question. This was a licensed dealer, is that right?
Yes.
So they were bonded and insured. Was there an action against the bond? Were you successful in obtaining some money
yes.
back? So the bond had not been exhausted? Or?
As far as I know, I'm the only one who's recovered out the bond. My insurance company not.
Okay.
Well, I'm trying to sort through all this. Is at least one of the points here, and that if you had known ahead of time that it was a previously totaled car or more, that you just wouldn't even, you would have walked with?
I never would have, no. I don't even buy cars that have been wrecked, because you can always tell, the paint will always look bad. I had a Porsche once that had been damaged, just a little tiny bit coming off the boat, and that spot on the paint was never right. So I make it a point to stay away from cars that have been wrecked.
Okay. So you feel that having a quote brand on the title would have given you enough flag, but I guess my question would be, at what point would you have known that?
Well, if it was on the registration, I took out a loan to get this car, and I know that the loan never would have been approved had they known that the car had been totaled too.
Yeah, a question for the sponsors of the bill. Is it envisioned that this would flag the registration?
Yes, it is.
It is. Okay, that's a point that hasn't been very clear.
Section 12, page 8 of the bill. Which is the language that would be added to the registration form.
What about a situation where someone is selling a car, let's say the same circumstance, but they say, I don't have the title, it's lost, and I'm going to have to fill out a lost or stolen title form. I'll give you a bill of sale. The sale transaction occurs. Subsequently, the forms are sent in. Is the bill addressed?
I'd have to ask Andy that question.
Okay, maybe we can do it.
Okay,
she was doing something else.
Yeah, and I have to say, I don't think that it's necessarily wrong to rebuild cars. I mean, we have auto body repair shops that do it all the time. It's just that if it's happened, you want to know about it. That's the only thing.
Okay.
No, you want to have all of the information so that you can make a decision.
Okay, let's go to the next witness.
My name is Glenn Anderson.
Steve, turn the microphone towards you, please.
My name is Glenn Anderson. I'm from Clackamas, Oregon. About 3 months ago, I purchased a 1987 RX-7 through an ad from Monty Sheldon Motor Company. Me and my wife went down and drove the car and looked at it. And after taking it out, just the two of us, looking at it, I noticed it was repainted. So I went back and I talked to the salesperson about it. He stated that he noticed that too, but didn't know anything about the history of the car. They had mentioned they bought it at an auction. So I told them it seemed to drive okay. Notice it pulled to the right pretty bad. We weren't sure why. I take it to a place called the Mazda Center in Tualatin, and they specialize in Mazdas, to do a pre-purchase exam on it. They did that and noted that the car had right front headlamp damage and radiator core damage. So based on that and